Welcome to this archived LDN Research Trust conference presentation. We hope you enjoy it.
So I am so excited of what you just presented, because this is very much what I don't have to dive into the science of this, but basically I'm the clinician side of the equation of this. I'm the person who gets to see this in real time with the patient, and what you just described was absolutely beautiful in all of this. So let me see, this is how we're working this. First of all, in this room, how many of you have used or know about viscum album extract or mistletoe? Excellent. And may I assume that you don't live in the United States? There you go. Well, I use all of those, so that's beautiful to hear. But it's nice to see that there are a few folks. Oops, does this work? Is it on the screen or? Oh, sorry. Sorry about that. I'm not sure. Ah, thank you. I have nothing to disclaim here, nothing to show on this. But basically, I wanted to start the conversation that giving a little bit of context to digging into what I want to talk about today about how I've come to use mistletoe in my practice since 2003, but also very much in relationship with other therapies. None of these therapies we're talking about, low-dose naltrexone included, should be used in isolation. There is kind of a magical happening in a sandbox altogether that I have found clinically, and it's really beautiful when you see the similarities and the differences among these therapies and how they can enhance our patient outcomes. So a little bit of the bad news before we dive in, and I'm really glad to hear you mention the glioblastoma piece. Fastest growing cancer in the world today is glioblastomas under the age of 24. Okay, let that sink in. The other fastest growing cancer today is colorectal cancers under the age of 35. These are not issues of aging, but it sort of is, because the issues of aging with this is that it's our mitochondria that are aging, and it's the damage to our mitochondria that are increasing our resurgence of lymphomas and leukemias in pediatrics, as well as these young cancers that we talked about that I just mentioned before. I tell you this bad news because I want you to have an understanding of why it's so important that we are all here for this conference sharing this information. My focus is oncology, but you could put this conversation into cardiovascular, neurodegeneration, you know, including Alzheimer's, diabetes, any metabolic syndrome issues. We are starting to see an explosion of these things simply because we have sort of lost our way. We are causing a lot of imbalance, a lot of dysrhythmia within our body, minds, and spirits by simply just being on the planet today. It's a gift and a pleasure to be part of this amazing world that we're in, but there are a lot of stressors and burdens that come with that. So when I think about this, and I talked about the mitochondria from the very beginning, I think about what's going into our mitochondrial bucket. Okay, we had the amazing presentations right before I got up here about the influence of inflammation, inflammatory markers. We've talked about angiogenesis, some of the things that grow our blood vasculature. We've talked about stress and what it can do to the system already. I just want to give you just a couple ideas of the drops in the bucket that accumulate in all of us. And my ask for all of us as clinicians, we can get very excited and very myopic about a particular treatment of any kind, but we have to look at the whole. We have to look at what's going into our bucket and affecting our mitochondrial expression. So a quick preview for people who are listening who are not familiar with the mitochondria. You might have remembered these from your early education as your powerhouses. But basically, these critters are organelles that derive their nutrients from what we feed them. And that's coming from a variety of sources. These literally come from the first mother. We have a long lineage of the mitochondrial DNA that comes all the way down, that basically we're all connected, we're all related, and we're all kind of coming from the same base camp, if you will, of what makes us thrive and what makes us ill. So aging is actually about what's going on with the quality, function, and efficiency of your mitochondria. And aging is sort of what we say is the breakdown of our tissues and of our cells and the communication of our cells, which actually leads to degenerative disease processes. And so mitochondria are so important in fact, probably most important in apoptosis, programmed cell death. So when those cells are worn out, they should die and start over. We should start anew all of the time. But with things like cancer, that doesn't happen. That system shuts down. And so we want to think about that as our base camp before I dive any further. And I'm really thankful that you gave such a brilliant talk on the immune system, because I'm going to be going a little bit into that and then very specifically into mistletoe. So most of you in this room probably know of Dr. William Coley. Raise your hand if you don't. I would just love to get a sense. So Dr. Coley actually in the 1890s started to inject patients with a bacterial agent that caused a fever. And he was doing so and having incredible outcomes with patients resolving or stabilizing their cancering process. That is sort of the early version of mistletoe, because only a few years later, we had the anthroposophical philosopher, Rudolf Steiner, in his doctrine of signatures observation of the world around him, started to notice these little clumps of things in trees that looked like tumors. So where we simply observed later, and still today, we're actually getting the research to back why these therapies are pretty profound, just like we're learning how LDN is quite profound and how it's impacting some of the things that were discussed in the previous lecture. And then I bring up what's happening in the US, this sort of, I call it the lipstick on a pig syndrome, which is where we've given a beautiful label and a lot of money thrown at investing billions of dollars in immune therapies. Billions. And as was discussed before, they are falling very short, and they can often be quite dangerous. As a practitioner who's been at this with cancer patients for 25 plus years, I'm here to tell you the first few patients of mine who went into checkpoint inhibitor trials are not here today. Not because of their cancer, but because the treatment took them out very, very quickly. We're learning a little bit more. We're starting to be a little more finesse with our approach with that. But it's precisely treatments like low-dose naltrexone and mistletoe that can really soften the blow and enhance some of those therapies in a pretty profound way. So I just wanted you to see a little bit of the history of where we've come from and where we're going with the immune modulating therapies. So I don't even have to talk about immunomodulating, I hope, at this point, because we had a beautiful discussion on this. But basically, this is a biologic response modifier. This is telling our body which direction do we need to be in any given moment, because we need both of our sides, if you will, of our immune system to function properly and to be in harmony with one another. And our sort of approach conventionally is to completely turn off or on one switch versus dialing up and down the volume button, you know, the volume knob. And so I wanted to also show when we think about that, when you think about the immune system, I think a lot of people really forget how systemic this process is and how involved all of our organs and many of our immune organs and immune tissues are. We kind of willy-nilly take out the appendix. We can live without our spleen. We can remove our tonsils. In fact, I think a study just came out in this past week about people who had tonsillectomies have pretty dysfunctioning immune systems for the rest of their lives. I mean, these are just examples again and again where we've sort of ignored or downplayed the role of our immune system until we could make $1 billion from it, frankly. And so this is my image of the immune modulating teeter-totter. I really prefer the beautiful image that was given before, but that's just it, is when I think about how the therapies of low-dose naltrexone and mistletoe, viscumalbum extract, and many other things like cannabis. I use a lot of cannabis medicine in my practice as well, and even things like ketogenic diet impact that center of the teeter-totter beautifully. So we're not guessing. If the body needs to be upregulated somewhere, it'll help. If it needs to be downregulated somewhere, it will help. These are just some of the cross-pollination, like I said, of the sand, playing in the same sandbox of mistletoe as well as low-dose naltrexone. And I just get so sort of enchanted by these very delicate, gentle medicines that, in my experience, have an impact on almost all of the patients that I work with to some degree. And the one common thread that's not in one of these boxes, but maybe should be assumed because of its impact on the endorphin and the endocannabinoid system, is the impact on quality of life. So we can talk all day about the science and about the amazing findings that we're having, but the reality is, talk to your patient, and they simply want to feel better in whatever means is possible. Whether they are looking for 50 more years of life or 50 more days of life, this is something that can bring incredible, incredible support to the patient, especially at end of life. So a little history of mistletoe. It's not just for kissing at Christmas, right? But it is a semi-parasitic plant that, interestingly enough, if you remove this plant from the host tree, the tree will die. Weird, right? I remember the early 90s in my early medical school years, reading some of the older medical texts that talked about removing the primary tumor would stimulate an explosion of the cancer in the body. Well, I still personally see that in many of my patients today, but we don't talk about that anymore. Did any of you have that same training in your understanding of the physiology around primary tumors and cancer? It was a long time ago, so maybe no one remembers, but that was really intriguing to me. The other intriguing component of this is what another piece that Steiner kind of watched or visualized or observed in this process was that the leaves grow, maybe two leaves in June in the summer months, and then in the winter it flowers, completely opposite of the rhythm of other plants that we are aware of. It also never touches the ground. It is implanted, it is embedded onto the limbs, thank you, to feces from bird droppings. Okay, so that's always good. A little microbiome-enriched soil for them. And then it also grows inward. These are things that are all very out of rhythm of nature. So again, back to that doctrine of signatures, you would look at this and realize, this doesn't behave like everything else around. So it's very interesting to me when we could take something as simplistic as doctrine of signatures and apply it in a way that 100 years later, we're finding more and more uses and explanations of why it's such a powerful anti-cancer therapy. So thousands of species of mistletoe. We seem to find the highest, richest lectin content specific to cancer in the Black Forest region. Austria, Germany, France, Switzerland seems to be the kind of the hub. It's also where we've kind of cultivated it, if you will, over many, many, many years at this point. Already talked about Dr. Ida Wegman. I love that this was a woman who just thought, I'm going to just take this stuff. I'm going to take a little bit of the summer leaf, a little bit of the winter flower, and I'm going to centrifuge it, and then I'm going to pull it out, and I'm going to inject it in my patient, right? Just to be in a place to be thinking in those terms 100 years ago. And it's now a therapy that's been used for 100 years as an injectable. It's probably the most studied integrative oncology therapy in the world. It's also one of the safest and most affordable, of course, not as affordable as low-dose naltrexone. But I wanted you just to kind of get a sense that this is, by the way, the over 7,000, that's a 2, not a 7, 2,000 studies. But if you are a patient in the EU, typically 80 to 85% German and Swiss will use this therapy at some point during their diagnosis of treatment. Same with 60 or so percent in the rest of the EU. So I think that's a pretty interesting piece here that you'll start to see some trends that might help you familiarize, see very familiar patterns of what we see with the use of low-dose naltrexone and endocannabinoid medicine. So the mechanism of action, we know we have the viscotoxins, which happen to be at their ripest, if you will, in the June months, so in the summer months, and you have the highest amount of the lectins, which this is all of the rage in immuno research, are the lectins and the polysaccharides, but the lectins are richest in the winter months. And so they take these two plants and they blend them together and they create an extraction. And there's different, some might ferment it, some might do an aqueous solution only, but ultimately we end up with a biologically unique plant when we mix its components at different times of the year. What we also know is it's very powerful as an anti-angiogenic, working directly on lowering VEGF. I know this as well in clinical practice, despite the studies, because I test VEGF in all my patients, so I can watch these things change. Stabilizes and repairs the DNA. This is a big one. That's what makes me think about the mitochondrial bucket, because this is a huge problem. Our mitochondria are important for keeping the stability within our DNA. And when they're off, everything's off. So I love this. It's kind of my mitochondria meal. So it inhibits all, I mean, my gosh, look at the long list here, anti-inflammatory, modulates pain response. Does this sound familiar to low-dose naltrexone that this room is very well attuned to? It can be administered sub-Q, IV, intratumoral. I've personally seen some pretty incredible intratumoral cases with pancreatic, bladder, prostate, superficial breast tumors. Oh, gosh, a couple, but the pancreatic was pretty phenomenal. There's several studies, three out, in fact, on intratumoral application for pancreatic cancer with complete resolution. Pretty amazing. So a couple of the descriptions I wanted to bring up, and I really appreciate you talking about the endocannabinoid and the low-dose naltrexone, because even though I'm going to talk a little bit about mistletoe and go back into a piece, I want you to see the real-life application and the people and their real experience with this. So first of all, every case I'm talking about have come to me terminal, stage four, end of life. That is something just to keep in mind when we talk about these cases. Ovarian has always had a really nice response to mistletoe therapy, but we've also learned in the last few years very specific response to low-dose naltrexone. Interestingly enough, when I was using mistletoe therapy before low-dose naltrexone, I had about a 50% response, meaning a stabilization or even slight pushback of the tumor burden in my patients with ovarian cancer with nothing else. They were doing no more treatments at this point. You have to realize the people I'm talking about here have already exhausted all conventional interventions. And so to see that just kind of slow down just with mistletoe about 50% of the time was pretty awesome. Then I started adding in low-dose naltrexone, and it was an 80 to 90% pushback. I was like, what am I seeing here? Because they are very similar in their personalities. And I really appreciate when you put up the sign, you know, how they overlap, certain dosings and whatnot change the genetic, you know, kind of expression. I think that's precisely what's happening. Of course, I don't have the science. Maybe your team could run with this, but I'm really intrigued by that because it was pretty profound. Or if I have a patient that I happen to start maybe on low-dose naltrexone first, especially historically, I would use low-dose naltrexone in autoimmune patients. So when I had my patient with RA, he had been on methotrexate and Enbrel and all of those incredible immunosuppressing drugs for many, many years. And so when I started him on low-dose naltrexone, it was a matter of weeks before he was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Now, if you've worked with anybody with RA who's been on those drugs, that's a black box warning on those drugs, that they are very common causes of B-cell lymphomas and NHL lymphomas. So what was incredible is they were already expecting him to go down the road of massive chemotherapy, of probably needing a stem cell because he had been on immunosuppressant drugs for 20, 30 years. Instead, he said, nope, I'm an old man. I don't want to do it this way. Just tell me what I need to do. So I put him on, you know, he was already on the LDN, which started to stabilize his RA symptoms immediately, within days. He quit cold turkey, probably not the greatest idea, but he quit cold turkey, all of his other, you know, biologic medications on that because, of course, the doctors, his oncologist even recommended it because it was enhancing the cancer at that point. And we started him on daily injections of mistletoe. This is a protocol from one of the companies out of Germany. Within 2 months, no evidence of disease. I just saw him at dinner. That was probably 10 years ago. I saw him at dinner in my community just about 2 weeks ago. And he was a pretty big important person in politics in my community. He's now retired, and he always introduces me as the person who saved his life. I'm like, no, that would be low-dose naltrexone and mistletoe therapy that saved your life. And then I also teased him because he was a pretty long-term chronic user of cannabis, so that probably had a little bit of a role, too, in there. The Crohn's piece, I'm so enthralled with this because I have never seen something work better for Crohn's than LDN. And that is, I mean, I've tried everything. As a naturopathic doctor, we always go after the tube and we do diet and elimination challenges, all those different pieces. It is incredible to me that I get a little pushback, a little bit of response, but when I brought on the low-dose naltrexone, like everything stopped. The diarrhea, depending on which end of the spectrum they were, it was incredible. So when I had this patient who had Crohn's and who came to see me, who'd gotten CRC from her Crohn's, or at least her doctors believed, because she was also on years of immunosuppressive therapies, we immediately started her on LDN, and we started her on mistletoe. She was in the hospital, in hospice, not able to even raise her head, extremely cachectic. Oh my goodness, extremely cachectic. A woman who's my height and probably weighed 88 pounds. Very, very, very quickly dying. She was just being eaten alive. And we started her on IV mistletoe therapy in the hospital. We were able to get it in there. So she, within 2 days, we were actually thinking we were doing it for pain management because her pain was not responding to any of the opiates. And because she preferred to stay on the LDN over the opiates, she did a wash out of the opiates, got right back on her LDN. When we started the mistletoe IVs, within 2 hours of the IV, her pain was gone and stayed gone. And we did daily IVs for about 2 weeks just to get her stabilized, and then she resumed with injections beyond that. But that combination here, I just saw a posting on her Facebook page of her 16-year-old daughter celebrating her birthday. That was 2.5 years ago that we did this IV with her. No one expected her to be here. She has no evidence of disease, none. And did not, remember, these are people who have had no conventional therapeutics any longer. They've already exhausted and been sent out to pasture. And then the pancreatic cases, this is, I could give you 20, 30 cases of this alone. Thank you to people like Dr. Bihari and like Dr. Robert Berkson. I've been using LDN and alpha-lipoic acid IVs for well over a decade in the treatment of pancreatic cancer. And I've had incredible, incredible responses. But I've had a few really tenacious cases. And those tenacious cases seem to be the cases that were the most mitochondrial beaten up. These are the folks that were still living on their 2 liters a day of Coca-Cola, that were still eating their standard American diets. Talk about metabolic nightmare. These were also the folks that were already kind of had a diabetic propensity and also were incredibly, incredibly cachectic in this stage of the disease. So even though they were kind of keeping the disease at bay with the LDN and the alpha-lipoic acid, we weren't able to recover the cachexia. We weren't able to really stabilize them and actually get some pushback. And when I started adding in IV mistletoe, sub-Q mistletoe, and a few colleagues of mine were willing to do intratumoral mistletoe therapies, these folks not only stabilized, within 2 weeks their cachexia resolved. And we're talking watching it. And so I look at cachexia via the labs, not just the body, because there's a lot of fat cachectic people walking around, and there's a lot of skinny, not cachectic people walking around. And so you have to look at this as a metabolic process and assess differently. But we see their albumin and their protein, their creatinine, their calcium levels totally normalize within a matter of 2 weeks, and their appetites return. You know, if anybody's in cachexia, they're not hungry. Even a ton of cannabis medicine often doesn't stimulate the appetites in these folks, even though we do our darndest to help them do that. But I've seen it time and again with pancreatic, which is, as most of you know, is a death sentence, really stabilize and turn things around and have, knock on wood, 3 or 4 unbelievable remissions that are still holding today. The other category where I've been using mistletoe a lot in my practice and LDN in combination, depending on the patient, is in folks who have family tendencies. So BRCA genes, ATM genes, Lynch mutations. These are where if the patient, of course, doesn't have the cancer, that's why we're seeing them for prevention, but they have a long history of Hashimoto's or Crohn's or other autoimmunity, I will often just put them on LDN, and that's plenty. But if they've had a long history of just all over the map, allergy, like their teeter-totter, the immunomodulating teeter-totter is all over the place, so allergies to autoimmunity and everything in between, and it's pretty much each generation is getting hit with this, I'm going to put them on a kind of a prophylactic treatment, 1 box a year of mistletoe therapy. and then usually the LDN in the interim. It's been really powerful. I've been doing this for about 6 or 7 years, so it's been really fun for me to work with these families. And then cleaning up the mess after treatment. That bucket we talked about early on is about as polluted as it gets once you've gone through chemotherapy. I mean, the bucket being sick is why we got sick to begin with. Now you've spent months or a year or more throwing things in to make that even worse. So you don't want to have that 70% recurrence, which is quite common. So we come in, test, assess, and address what's in that bucket and clean it up. And my favorite tools for that tend to be things like low-dose naltrexone and mistletoe therapy. So again, I want you just to recall that there's so much more here than just looking at the research, looking at the individual chemical pathways, looking at these things. We want to remember the whole being that's wrapped around those things. And I love Dr. Eli Jones, a famous oncologist in the 1920s, about not forgetting the general condition of your patient. And the quality of life piece that both mistletoe and LDN bring to the table are quite impressive. So if you have more questions, I have a lot more offerings. You can email me directly. I'm happy to get you some of these other slides and other information if you're inclined. But thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to this presentation. All past conference presentations can be found on our website, www.ldnresearchtrust.org.